Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and we'll be taking your calls. So keep it tuned here and we'll be right back. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I have this nice, kind of a baritone?
A little baritone, alto,
yeah.
A little lower than an alto?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Great.
So I'm much better than it sounds like I am.
Uh-huh. Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Not contagious.
Not contagious.
Great.
Yeah,
especially not over the Internet.
That's right. Everybody, relax. You should be fine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I preface every interaction with that, because one of my great pet peeves is people walking around sick, and they walk up and they hug you and kiss you, and then they say something, and you say, are you okay? Oh, God, no, I have this awful cold. Then why are you kissing me?
Yeah.
So I don't get around people until I'm not contagious,
uh-huh.
And I like to reassure them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Great.
And it's a germy world.
It is a germy world.
Yeah.
Yes. And more people moving to more places and mm-hmm. more germs going around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a global germ community now that we have. So,
yeah.
So it's very good.
Yes.
It's I think it's good to be mindful.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I don't enjoy being sick that much.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of restful for a couple of days, and then after that, it's not my favorite life experience. So I project that onto other people as well, and so I would like them to not infect me. So I'd like to work as diligently as I can not to infect them,
yeah.
Which I think has a lot of carryover to a lot of things in life. You know, that one of my favorite T-shirts is do unto yourself as you would have others do unto you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that kind of, that's how I want to be treated. That's how I want to treat myself. That's how I want to treat you. That's how I want you to treat me.
Yes.
So it's...
So just like spiritual practice, it's sort of being aware and bringing everything back to me and what's going on with me and what is my... How am I aware of myself in such a way so that I can be conscious in my relations with others as well as with myself?
Yeah, so that I can be aware and I can take responsibility and I contribute in the way that I would like to be contributed to.
Yes.
Yeah. So you know, it's not 100%. It's not. You know, I'm not going to do unto you as I would have you do unto me, because I don't actually know what you
mm-hmm.
want.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to take care of you in the way I'd like to be taken care of without checking in and making sure that that's what you want.
Yes.
But I feel fairly safe in the germ thing. I think I can pretty accurately project that most people don't enjoy catching something. And so then I can take responsibility for doing my part to minimize the effects of my presence in the world.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's all an opportunity, right?
There's
all awareness in all of it.
Yes, yes. And as I've heard you say, everything is spiritual.
Everything is spiritual. Yeah, yes. People like to divide things up, but that we know where that tendency comes
uh-huh.
from.
Uh-huh.
Because if those voices can get you to believe that this is this and that is that and those two don't have anything to do with each other, then it's going to start setting up these little areas of life where I don't have to pay attention there, or I can just do whatever I need to do to survive there, or whatever, because that's not spiritual. And I only have to be aware of spiritual things. And and nothing really that I want to do or that's worthwhile is spiritual. So that makes that handy, because, you know, what's really important in life is making money and being successful and getting what I want and all of the, and those aren't spiritual. So, and that's what takes up all of my time and effort and energy, and that's so there's, unfortunately, there's nothing left over for spiritual, and I feel bad about that, but what can I do? Because I need to do all of these other things. So if we just accept that it's all spiritual, which is a basic sort of premise of Zen, and it's all material, you know, it's not... It's not either or; they're the same. Then nothing is left out of awareness practice, and to me, it just makes it easier. I don't have to wonder what to focus on and what not to focus. Focus on everything.
Great. Well, I've been looking at something that I wanted to share with you, and that is I'm doing the email class, and your encouragement last week was to look at what we want to do in life. And
specifically, for those who aren't in the class, it kind of an odd choice, and perhaps, but I think a good one. We're looking at death. In the, as they say in modern times, in the run up to the holidays. So a lot of people, of course, want to not think about those kinds of things and just get into overeating and parties and and spending a lot of money. But we're looking at death. And so part of that is looking at where you are in your life and what you're postponing and what you want to do and kind of how you want to live and who you want to be and with the idea of doing that now rather than waiting until you're dead and, you know, having to set up another incarnation. So go ahead.
So I was looking at wanting to spend some time at the monastery, wanting to do spiritual practice. Some other people were writing about that also. And I had a huge emotional reaction yesterday reading some of that, lots of body sensations. And, of course, emotions make things real. And I had a sense of a very young part of me, what comes up is like 3 or 4 years old, who's being told that he has to choose between spiritual practice and his family. And he's being pulled apart. One side has one arm, one side has the other arm, and here's this little three-year-old trying to deal with this impossible question. And sort of being torn between two things that he loves. And I can feel the energy in my body now. And it's just awful. He's there being destroyed by this duality, it seems like, that's been set up.
And we would say, of course, this imaginary duality. Because, of course, nobody has to make that kind of choice, actually. Now, that's kind of an interesting one because, of course, the Buddha actually did make that choice. Which, and Jesus actually made that choice. It is an interesting issue in spiritual practice. And most people don't want to be Jesus or the Buddha. They'd like to do spiritual practice, but they actually don't want to drop all their clothes at the mouth of the cave and just go in there and you know, sit down and spend the next whatever period of time looking inward. So it's actually not a choice that that people have to make in the sense that we can pay attention to everything. We can pay attention wherever we are. And so to me, the thing that's most interesting about that is once again, how conditioning will use anything to torture a person. So if it can put two things that you love, present them as opposites, then you're bound to suffer. I mean, you're going to be tortured whichever direction you go in. So if you're with your family, you really want spiritual practice. That's what the voices are saying. If you're practicing somewhere, then you're missing your family. And so to be able to, what I hear you saying is see that as a process.
Finally, because it's interesting you say that because yesterday, it was really, 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 really real.
You and had to make that decision.
Somebody had to. Somebody was agonizing over this. And today, it occurred to me that You know, I've had awful agonizing situations before with different content.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And they were really real, too.
Yes. And actually, you know, probably that same 3 or 4-year-old was being stretched apart on each of those pieces of content as well.
Yes.
Because that's what, because conditioning, karma, is a bully. Egocentric karmic conditioning is a bully.
Yes.
And it really specializes in getting people into that little kid place and then just throwing them into hell and torturing them over and over and over and over. So, yeah, I think that's very wise of you to recognize that, wait a minute, that little guy has been in that place before, different content. It has passed. We've survived.
Yes.
And so, of course, as you know, the secret here, the answer to this is, jump in there and take care of that little guy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to solve the content.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Take care of that little guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw in this particular content limitations that have been created in my mind and projected onto other people.
Yes.
As in, my partner won't let me do this. Because I have a child, I can't do this.
Yes.
And
So that's another important part, right?
Yes.
Put you in a place and then close off all the exits.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it's just fascinating because, you know, when I push against those walls against my partner, for example, there's nothing there.
Uh-huh.
I get a, yes, sure, go ahead, do that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's
all made up with one purpose in mind.
All made up with one purpose in mind. And yeah. I thought yesterday, let's see, if my partner's not stopping me and my baby's not stopping me, then what's stopping me?
Yeah. And the beautiful part of this is the practice, right? Mm-hmm. This is awareness practice.
Yes.
Right here. You did it. You didn't have to go anywhere in order to have this. In fact, you had the whole thing within the context of your family.
Yes. 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 Mm-hmm.
Bad news for the voices.
Bad news for the voices. Thank you for that, Sherry.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm very grateful. And the phone lines are lighting up here.
Other people have issues as well.
Yes, unless you've solved them all, but perhaps new ones have come up. I'd like to welcome Anna from England. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello. Hi, Michael. Hi, Sherry.
Good morning.
Hello. Yes, good morning. Oh, it's that time again. guess what? I have a young lady here with a report for you.
Excellent.
I have Poppy. I'll just put her on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, right, here she is.
Hi, Poppy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You're not getting a lot of sleep, though, are you?
No.
So you have a report for us?
Yes, I do, because you asked me to ask me how the voices mean, like the stuff I said last time.
So now, help me out here. So the voices are specializing in telling you what other people think.
Yeah.
Primarily about you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? Okay. And you were going to look into that for us.
Yeah.
And what'd you find?
Well, when I asked them how they knew that, it was like... mainly because I've heard my friends or other people talking about other people, like other than me.
Uh-huh.
About people in that sort of way.
Uh-huh. So if your friends talked about other people that way, the voice says logically, they're probably talking about you that way.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And where does that leave you then?
I'm not sure, really, because, I don't really know where I stand in contrast with the other people that my friends talked about, too, my friends. So.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I have actually, managed to let people know, the stuff that I was having trouble with, and it's all gone really well, and no one hates me or anything, so...
Uh-huh. So the things that the voices were threatening didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
Isn't that good to know?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, one of my, another one of my friends, actually, it turns out that she was feeling like that as well.
Uh-huh.
And I think me doing something about it helped her do something about it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a really important issue to address, isn't it? Probably you've noticed that an awful lot of people do that kind of talking about other people, the gossiping, that sort of thing. And to realize how painful it is can really inspire us not to want to do it.
Yeah, I realize that a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When I was in high school, this new girl came to town, and I grew up in a kind of a small town, and so when somebody new came to town, it was a really big deal. And she was very pretty, and she was very rich. And so, you know, the rumors, the gossip that started in, you know, nobody knew anything about her, but everybody had something to say about her. And after time went by, you know, I got to know her, and we were talking about something at some point, and of course she knew how much people gossiped about her. And so we're like maybe 14 or 15 or something at this time. And I said something like, well, you know, what is that like for you? And she said, well, I figure if they're talking about me, they're leaving somebody else alone. And, I mean, I can remember just kind of being dumbstruck that somebody could be so philosophical about something that, you know, most of us find so painful and really difficult to deal with. And she was just so kind of removed from the whole thing. And all these years later, I've obviously never forgotten that. I just thought it was one of the wisest things I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's truly amazing.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's so generous. You know, well, you know, it's okay if they gossip about me. At least they're not gossiping about somebody else.
Yeah.
So that might be a little consoling kind of a thought at some point, too, because people do talk. And it's also true that we are not going to be exempt. And even if, do you know that expression about just because you're a vegetarian doesn't mean the bull won't gore you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can stop gossiping about people, but there are still going to be people who gossip about you. And so just to know that all of that is true, but you don't have to depend on those voices in your head that say these upsetting things to give you accurate information.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything more you've heard from them, or?
Not really. It's all gone really well, and I don't really hear them too much anymore. But my friend is having a party. It's a friend that I don't see her very often. She's one of the ones I've had the most problems worrying about what she thinks of me. And she's having a party in a few weeks, and there's going to be some of her friends there that I don't actually know, and I'm very worried about that. But
uh-huh.
I don't think she's really be much of a problem.
Uh-huh. Well, social stuff is really anxiety-producing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just is. And to me, the difference is whether you are in there reassuring yourself, you know, letting yourself know that you're a great person and the odds are good that people are going to like you and people who don't, well, they just don't, and you can't be friends with everybody anyway, and, you know, whatever kinds of things would make that part of you who gets anxious feel a little more confident and secure, and not listening to the voices that are there just to make you anxious and make you feel bad and insecure and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the best we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Get a good night's sleep for the few minutes you have left.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
I'll pass you on to my mom now.
All right, bye.
Bye. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi there. Hi. Thank you very much for talking to Poppy.
Oh, it was great.
That's super. That's really great.
You know, the thing that's I just keep getting back to is, you know, nothing much changes for us. You know, we're all dealing with the same kinds of things.
It does, yeah.
Sort of wherever we are in life, we're really dealing with the same things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, oh, I could have spoken to Sherry about that.
Yeah, and it's just, I'm always so happy when somebody is looking at these issues at that age. Boy, I wish I had been. You know, how much easier life could have been if I had been aware of these kinds of issues as processes way back then.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's very, very different to how I was at that age as well. Way, way different.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. It's wonderful. I love it. I love to have her, you know about all of this. And she has There Is Nothing Wrong With You for Teens, which has actually gone round her circle of friends. And I picked it up the other day, and it's a bit sticky, and, you know, a few of the pages are a little bit stuck together. And
it's well-loved.
Yeah.
Good, good.
So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay then. Well, thank you very much.
That's it? Nothing for Mom?
I don't know. Actually, have I got time? Because Poppy was on for quite a while. I'm a bit worried. Are there other people waiting?
I think we're probably fine.
Okay then. There was something that I was wanting to talk to you about, and it kind of actually follows on from Poppy, actually. One of the big things in my life that I was wanting to bring up was the subject of fear. I seem to have a lot of fear in my life.
Uh-huh.
The way I notice it is all sorts of things happen in my body, but the biggest thing of all is that I sweat really, really badly. And it's begun over a period of time. It began when I left full-time education, when I was about 22,
uh-huh.
when I left college. And what happens is when I'm at home, I'm mostly okay. But when I leave the house, that's when it starts.
Uh-huh.
But it also starts in the house. If I'm watching TV, or if I'm emailing, or if I'm on the phone. So it seems to be like people.
So
like a fear of people.
Uh-huh. So any time you're engaging with other people,
yeah.
That's a time when this could start.
Yeah.
And is there conversation that goes with it?
This is why I have such a problem with it, because I can't find any.
Uh-huh.
I've tried to look at this, and I draw a blank.
Uh-huh. So when it starts, so you're just walking around, and suddenly you just start sweating?
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 37 now, and this has been going on since I was about 22.
Okay, so
I've had tests and all sorts, and
yeah, it's not
nothing shows up. No,
it's not a prolonged menopause.
No, it just shows up when I'm having contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm at home doing whatever, that it's not there, and somebody could come into my house, and I'll suddenly start then.
Uh-huh.
So a person can come into my house.
Okay, so here's what I would encourage you to do.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I present this to you,
uh-huh,
it's going to sound like I'm asking you to analyze this.
Okay.
But I'm not. That's not what I'm asking you to do.
Okay.
I'm asking you to ask the question, what
uh-huh
is it? What is it? And the question is not designed to take you up into your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's designed to bring forth an intuition or a deeper sense of knowing or understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how you can have an issue going on and you think about it and you worry about it and you whatever, and then you're mm-hmm just walking around one day and all of a sudden it just kind of drops into place and you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that?
Mm-hmm.
That experience?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're actually going for. And
okay,
the what is it is, it's like bringing attention to the fact that you are open to and waiting for clarity about this issue.
Okay.
So it's not going up into your head to have a conversation. You're not figuring it out. You're not analyzing it. You're not doing any of those things.
Yeah,
you're just
cool,
sitting still, kind of with your hands open, ready to receive the clarity.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
And so in this way, you begin to actually look forward to these events.
Okay.
Okay? Because yeah, it's only when they're there like that, excuse me, that you have a good chance of really being present to what it is. Now, the clarity could come when you're driving down the street. It's true.
Mm.
But it's really getting non-judgmentally, non-critically, intimately present to the experience that's going to open up that channel of clarity for you.
Okay.
So instead of that aversion to it, you know, you're going to consciously begin to look forward to this so that you can speed up the process, not so you get rid of it, but so that you get clarity about what it is.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
And then you know you have to report back, right?
Yes.
Which means another missed night's sleep, but
that's it.
That's just the price we pay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Michael.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Anna and Poppy from England. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be right back.
Show pages.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
Very good.
I'd like to welcome Elizabeth from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Hi.
Sherry, I'm calling because my son died in October.
Mm.
And Dave came and talked at the memorial service.
Uh-huh.
Which was so great. And I was just thinking that I'm like one of those people who, you know, I've been practicing the piano a little bit, but here's the recital.
Right.
You know, and I just go kind of up and down a lot, you know. I mean, I'm just so grateful for what I've learned from you, from starting reading your books about 3 years ago. And then coming to 2 retreats. And I'm so grateful for that because I think I'd be out of my mind otherwise.
And no matter what we do, nothing prepares us for something like that, does it?
No. It was a car accident, and so it was just completely a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to say the least.
Yeah.
So
I actually, I don't know if you know this, but I had the reverse experience. When I was 18, my mother died in a car accident. And there's something about that here 1 minute.
Yeah.
Gone the next.
Yeah.
Completely unexpected. The last thing in the world that you would ever think was going to happen. And just the shock of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, you're sort of really busy with lots of things that you have to do.
Yes.
And that kind of carried me for quite a ways.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm okay. But at the same time, I'm noticing that I do some very strange things. Like when his things were returned to us, there was only one shoe. Mm. So when I see shoes on the freeway, I feel like I should stop, that it must be his shoe.
Mm.
And of course, I know it's not his shoe.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I, you know, it's still, and I'm looking for his car because I kind of know he's not going to come home now.
Mm-hmm.
But I look for his car when I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are you okay with all that?
Looking for his car?
All these things.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm sort of, I am.
Yeah, you've given yourself permission to
just
be as crazy as you need to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get caught up in the same old things that I've always been caught up in, like, you know, my house doesn't look good enough for other people to come over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really. And so, of course, everybody reassures me that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very hard for me to, like, do things like put the laundry away.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the guest bedroom has just piles of laundry on it that aren't
mm-hmm.
folded. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have a guest, so it's okay. But I don't like it.
Well, somebody doesn't.
Yeah, somebody in there hates that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same
But, you know, this is an interesting one. You know, 99% of what I talk about is conditioning and the voices and how much of that conditioned reaction and conversation has no purpose other than our suffering.
Right.
So, I mean, here is a woman who's lost her child. And somebody's concerned about the way she keeps her guest room?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, somebody's, like, concerned that she can't find her socks, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice to be able to just get them out of the drawer rather than fishing around on the bed trying to find them.
A wise friend of mine told me once I had just gone through a profound loss, and this friend said, you know, here's my best advice to you. Just give yourself permission for anything.
Okay.
And I've never forgotten that. Now, my specialty is losing keys.
Yeah.
So whenever I have that kind of loss and in my life, which blessedly I haven't had for several years, but at one point I had three of them, just boom, 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 within months of each other. And, I mean, I just went out and bought like 10 sets of keys. And then I would just, you know, I would just carry them all around with me.
I'm just going to go get some more socks.
Yeah, yeah, just buy a bunch of socks. Yeah, yeah. Or go without, you know.
Or make them all match, so then it doesn't matter which one I pull out of the pile.
Yeah, pick a color you like, buy buy six dozen pairs.
Six dozen.
And because it's just, I mean, there's just no way for us to have any expectations about ourselves at
mm-hmm.
a time like this. I mean, you've never gone through anything like this.
No.
How could any of the same rules apply?
Well, hopefully some of the rules that you've taught me apply.
Well, it's just that the system is in such profound shock.
Yeah, my body's in shock.
Yeah,
And I tried starting last night to do your, I can't even think of what it's called now, but the six CDs.
Oh, the Compassionate Self
And I don't think I can do it because I couldn't even feel the emotions in my body. But I don't think I'm depressed.
Oh, I bet you're depressed.
I am depressed.
Oh, how could you not be depressed?
Okay.
Yeah, how could you not be depressed? And it's not, you know, there are different kinds of depression.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not like you know, you should run down and get Prozac or something.
Right.
But it's a, to me, it's just a natural response to what's going on. My mother died, I thought most of the time when I was walking around, I was just fine. And she also died in October, and I came to the next April married and pregnant and living in a different part of the state. And I can remember the moment that I came to, and it was like awakening from a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if you had talked mm-hmm. to me during that period of time, I was coherent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have probably told you mm-hmm. that I was married and mm-hmm. and where I lived, but I wasn't really there. And what I know is that the system was just integrating that information, just slowly taking it in a way that I could finally grasp it without just losing my mind completely.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah, so just a lot of permission.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a relief because there's sometimes, well, especially the first day, I remember just standing on the other side of the room watching myself.
Yeah.
Not, and thinking, oh, she's so reasonable.
Yeah.
Wow, look at her.
Yeah.
So who was I then?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, right. We get into those kinds of places, and there's nothing in the system that can deal with this. And, and we go into these kinds of survival responses, and it's good.
It's good. One thing I was really interested in at the beginning of the show was you said it is all spiritual, it is all material, but that's the Zen idea.
Mm-hmm. That body and mind are one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I first heard this news, I was just like being stabbed all over my body. That was the sensation I had.
Oh, yeah.
It was really amazing.
Yeah.
But then, so the reason that was interesting to me was that I grew up a Christian Scientist, and of course, for them, everything is spiritual; nothing is material.
Mm.
So I don't know if you're aware of them at all, but
I am, and it's an interesting, it's interesting.
Yeah,
yes, we could say it's all spiritual, but you know, when you stub your toe, it really, really does hurt, and you get big bruises and that sort of thing. So. I can understand talking about it that way. I certainly know what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just denies a huge part of the human experience.
Right.
And I don't personally see a benefit in it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that's what drew me to Zen, is that it is so supremely practical.
Yeah.
And I'm not faulting what anybody else believes, but... you know, in Zen we say it's not one and it's not two. So if, you know, it's one, okay, yes, everything is one. That is true. And there is also multiplicity, which is obvious because I'm looking around this room and I see the floor and the ceiling and the windows and the doors and the chairs and the rug and the and that is my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, on a level of physics, we know that, well, there isn't actually any such thing as a chair. But that doesn't change the fact that when I want to sit down, there it
you
is.
You look for one. Yes.
Yeah, I go over, I sit down, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can again, you know, in Zen we say with the ideal comes the actual.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these things can be true at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing is born and nothing dies. And it hurts like hell, when somebody we love
has
leaves.
Appeared to have.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right. Maybe in fact it's never happened.
Well,
it
I
sure
keep,
seems like it.
It doesn't. But then I keep stalling out over that word died. I mean, I don't like to say that he died
mm-hmm.
because it seems like something he did.
Right.
You know, and it felt better for me to say for a while that he was killed because it was something that happened to him.
Right.
But
yeah.
then I didn't like that either, and
mm-hmm.
my grandmother used to say passed away, but I don't like the word away because where is that?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I thought passed on sounded pretty good, but then that's kind
Beware.
Of old-fashioned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I say left, or I'll just avoid the whole thing and say before the accident or after the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a problem with that word.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I don't know about you, but for me, I think part of the problem with these things is what you started out with. It, you know, we think we know what we're talking about. And
well,
we
yeah.
realize we don't.
Right, because where is he now?
That's right.
If nothing, he said that the one religious precept he liked was, or concept that he liked was, no beginning, no ending.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, well, that's great, you know, but so where is he?
Right, right, yeah. And before this happened, it was not a problem for you.
Well, and I did think of that, you know,
yeah.
like where was he before he was born? That wasn't a problem. I mean, it was an amusing problem, but it wasn't a difficulty.
That's right.
And what about all my other children that didn't get born? You know, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
So why is this such a problem? Is it just that, you know, if suddenly anything were missing from your life, it would be a problem?
Yeah.
I mean, that's I certainly want to take that back. That sounded horrible. But a person is such a huge concept.
Yeah. Well, and it speaks to ourselves, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It puts us in touch with all of, again, you know, Michael and I were talking earlier about in the email class and that we're dealing with death now, we're looking
yeah.
at, we're exploring the whole issue of death.
Uh-huh.
And why? Because we don't think about it, because we don't face it, because we don't know what it is, because,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's
because
not
it,
it's not relevant until suddenly it is.
So relevant.
So relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah.
and it's just, it's good. It's good to consider our experience of these things as quickly as we possibly can. You know, and so you did to whatever degree you did, and still there is no preparation. It just gives you... it gives you a little perspective, perhaps.
There are moments when I suppose it does, and then there are other moments where I just am overwhelmed.
Yes.
But usually when I think about him, I'm okay, but when I think about what I'm going to miss, then I feel terrible. So
that,
I try not to do that.
Yeah, because, and once again, there is awareness. So when you think about him, it's not a problem.
Right.
When conditioned mind wants to take you into the past or wants to take you into the future, then that's when it becomes
mm-hmm.
overwhelming,
yeah.
which is true for us in every moment of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just that at a time like this, the stakes are so high
mm-hmm.
because the suffering is so great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, bless you.
Oh, thank you.
Mm.
Boy.
Yeah, very, very big.
Yeah, and I know I have to just be satisfied with mystery, too, because we'll never know exactly what happened.
No.
Why the accident occurred.
Oh, no.
And I have to just let that go.
Which, again, is such an important thing for us. If we could apply that to everything in life, how much easier life
yeah.
would be. We don't know.
Well,
We
don't. Sometimes when I have an expression now that I've coined with my husband, which is I open a door, and in it I, oh, we helped him buy that car. How terrible. Mm-hmm. And so I say, okay, I'm just going to close that door.
Yeah.
But so I open it, and I close it, and I open it, and I close it. And there's a bunch of doors, you know. Did I talk to him enough about this? Did I give him enough guidance? Did I do it? And I close the door.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm conscious of opening the door, and I'm conscious of closing the door. But
yeah.
But am I avoiding something by not getting all the things that are in there out? And
here is my experience of avoidance.
Okay.
You cannot avoid anything.
Okay.
Sooner or later, whatever is ours to deal with, we'll get.
Oh, okay.
So as
All right.
long as you can avoid it, avoid it. And,
okay.
and with that kind of thing, that kind of conversation that is just designed for suffering,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you ever need to open that door. That's why I encourage people to learn how to direct your attention. So that when those voices want to come up and have a conversation about how you
mm-hmm.
helped him buy that car,
mm-hmm.
you have your ability to say, no, thank you. I don't want to have that conversation.
Okay.
And you bring your attention right back here to the breath.
Okay.
And if you want to think about him, you think about him.
Right.
Yeah. And even, as you know, the difference between pain and suffering, there are times when just thinking about him is excruciatingly painful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not suffering.
Right. Okay. Like, I noticed that it's easier to look at photographs when he was little.
Yes.
Because I already lost that.
That's right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I suppose...
Oh, that's such an important point.
Oh.
Yeah. Because that's one of the excruciating things about losing somebody that we love. It's we lose the now, but we lose the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize, and I think, until they're gone, how much of having them included an imaginary future.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, you're just not supposed to die when you're 21.
No.
And yet, it seems like the world right now is full of 21-year-olds, males especially, who are dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a cruel fact.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. And maybe it's always the case. And maybe we're just more sensitive to it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, keep in touch with us, okay?
Oh, I will.
I remember reading the stages of grieving. And they say it's about 6 weeks. You alluded to this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the beginning, there's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's distraction. And
mm-hmm.
and then after about 6 weeks, everybody else has gone back to their lives.
Yeah.
And you can't.
Right.
And it's a very difficult time, and that time between, at least for me, you can let me know what happens with you, but for me, the immediate loss and grieving and that moving through that to the point where there's a moment at which it feels like I have that loved one again, when it's not just such raw pain,
mm-hmm.
that I can actually remember funny times and
mm-hmm.
tell stories and reminisce and
mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. And that little stretch of time is a brutal one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I did feel this real sort of drop
mm-hmm.
in from something that was okay to something that's more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just take the very best care of yourself that you possibly can.
Okay, I'm going to go buy a lot of socks.
There you go. There you go. And keep the door to that guest room closed.
Okay.
Only open it long enough to throw more things in and then pull it shut really quick.
It was very funny the other day. I walked in there and I have this neck thing that's in the shape of a cat, which used to be lying on this chair, but on top of that was a bathrobe, and on top of that was some sweaters, and on top of that was my cat.
So you might want to leave the door open enough to let the cat in and out. All right.
Oh, dear. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. We've come to the end of another wonderful show. Thank you for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
I have a pile of email questions here that we have not gotten to yet, and I promise that we will get to them just as soon as we can.
That we will do our very best.
We will do our very best.
Which is all we can ever do.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.